will show the world what the ultimate bioweapon looks like when I let loose Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of the Twig crew upon Chris Redfield and his unnervingly hot little sister. Oh. Oh, yes. Right here on this weekendgeek.net.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. Games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of this week and kink. This week and kink.
Hey guys, what's going on? You're listening to This Week in Geek, and I'm, of course, your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. Well, guys, a lot of mid-season finales are happening across many different networks, and, well, I get to talk to one of the stars of one of the shows that just had its mid-season finale last week. I'm talking about Beauty and the Beast, and that's happening over on the CW right now. And, well, this is one of those shows I never expected them to remake, so to speak, because the original aired in the 80s. It had Hellboy on it. It was pretty cool. The monster scared the shit out of me. But I've got one of the people on the line. You just heard him. You just heard him giggle right there. I'm talking about actor Austin Basis. Now, this guy plays JT Forbes on the show. And, well, if you watch the show, you know what he does. So without any further ado, let's introduce Austin.
How you doing?
I am doing okay. So,
yeah.
Like I was saying in my intro there, this show scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Did it really?
The monster was freaky looking to me, man.
Yeah, I always thought he was kind of like Lion Man. It was like those Saturday, you know, morning day kind of sci-fi series on, like, you know, the public stations. There was always kind of like those weird man-human type of, you know, creatures
sort of
that were latex and foam and you know, jowls and all that hair, like, you know, long, weird hair in weird places. so it's scary. And then, you know, to know Ron Perlman was underneath all that makeup, and then to see Ron Perlman, I'm like, you know, why he's such an interesting character type that they didn't really need to do that much. But he's an interesting actor. And so he's had a great career with Sons of Anarchy. And now we have a totally different version of that show.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things because Hollywood obviously has been remaking a lot of stuff coming out of the 80s too, in my opinion, moderate degrees of success. Let's just say I'm really worried for the RoboCop remake when that happens in like February. So I guess there is my first question for you, Austin. What was it like to get involved in this show that had a bit of a history, the fact that it is one of these 80s style kind of remakes?
Well, I felt like, you know, with any remake, there's always the risk of alienating the fans of the original, because you're not making, you know, a remake of something that was not successful or bad. You're usually making doing a remake of something that had a degree of success. And when I read the script, and I didn't really know too much about the series, but my wife kind of clued me in, and just knowing from what you know of, like, because I was pretty young, and so there was this, you know, beast man that lived in the sewers, like, he looked like a kind of a lion man that wore like medieval clothes. And so that was my impression of it. And I didn't really need to read the original or see the original version, because this one was so different and really put it in a modern time frame and gave it a little more of an action romance. I guess the original had romance, but, you know, because that's the fairy tale. But this is just a reimagining of the classic fairy tale, more so than it is a remake of the original TV show. So we use elements of the TV show and the core of the fairy tale of Beauty and the Beast and put it in modern day New York City. And so it's a, it's a great, I think, you know, adapted darker, way darker version of Beauty and the Beast.
Well,
the original.
You know, it's really interesting because now, more so than I can think of any time in recent, outside of maybe the mid 90s, a lot of fantasy, sci-fi, and just action adventure television has really come out with like a real roar of vengeance, if you will, because there's so much stuff on TV. TV right now, there's this show, there's that other fairy tale show whose name completely escapes me at the moment.
Once Upon a Time.
That's it. Yeah, there's also
Grimm.
Yeah, like it's surprised how hot fairy tales are right now, and even right now,
Creepy Hollow.
Yeah, and even in the video game world, there's even a bit of a resurgence with that. They actually have a video game now based upon a comic book called Fables, which puts fairy tale characters in the real world. And
oh, wow.
It's pretty intense. I'll actually talk to you a bit more about it off air. And I just think it's interesting that we're looking back to the old tales. We're looking back at everything that's been done and putting it, not necessarily with the dark, gritty new paint on it, but we're looking at it from a different angle. So with all that in mind, and where do you see this show going now that you've had the mid-season finale? And the game has changed. Where do you think things are going to go on the show now?
I think in line with what you're saying, based on what our show was last year, we defined the romance, we established the characters, how they met, how they fell in love. And beyond that, and keeping to the fairy tale of Beauty and the Beast or the fable, or it's, you want to have a longevity for the show. So part of what we were trying to do towards the end of last season was backtrack and create a mythology while still pushing the plot forward. So this season is purely on several levels. It's to find out individually who the characters are outside of their romance, of their relationship, like the Beauty and the Beast, so that when they come together, it's a more strong, more epic romance and not rushed into as it may have been last season because there was such a demand from the fans. And again, we're getting into past the mid-season finale. What's the most interesting part about this season, I believe, is that you're going to start seeing a deeper mythology than anyone ever expected. And to see that we're connecting it back to a past, and there's an organization that supposedly created Vincent, and it was kind of a conspiracy theory. It was a government black ops organization called Muirfield, and so the executive producer Brad Kern, who came on this year, had an idea that Muirfield was a conspiracy theory, but for this show to have legs and to last 5 years or more, we needed a mythology that was bigger than Muirfield and just a government conspiracy organization, which leads to fairy tales and fables and a mythology like Greek mythology, or going back like a show like Supernatural does, where you're talking about the apocalypse and you're dealing with way bigger subjects than just, you know, people making government organization making super soldiers. So I think that's what we have to look forward to on the show, and to find out who every character really is was kind of the theme of this season. Who am I with regards to each of the main five characters?
Now with the show moving forward, and obviously that dark government angle kind of coming into it, and that usually means a lot of people don't live very long. And, well, you're the confidant, Vincent. Do you think you're going to live?
Well, in my contract says I will. But I know how that goes. They can do whatever they want. But I think, you know, I feel that JT is vital to the storyline because he provides a lot of different services to not only Vincent, the Beast, and to the story in general, but to the audience. He's the resident geek on the show. And so I think when you're talking about fanboys and fangirls, you know, a character like mine being represented in a show like Beauty and the Beast on a network like CW, where people are used to seeing some pretty good looking people. And not that I'm not good looking, but I am a character actor. And so, I think that is, an inroads for an audience to watch a show like Beauty and the Beast. That's an epic romance and have all these supernatural and action oriented and big, beautiful, epic love scenes and have a character like mine to ground it. And an actor like me to try to bring it down to a more real level, in addition to the fact that JT is a man of all trades. He is not only a biochemistry professor, but he is a self-taught computer hacker. He is willing and able to, get into fights with the best of them. He's had some, encounters with Muirfield and attackers in future episodes, where he uses trank guns, he uses a bat, he uses his he's broken into the morgue twice. He does a lot of things to service and to help Vincent in whatever he needs, because he's a loyal best friend. And in the upcoming episode, the first episode after the mid-season break, I think it's going to be focusing on JT and what his story has been over the course of this season, but also since Vincent came back into his life and said, I'm alive. I didn't die in Afghanistan. I'm now half man, half beast. And I was part of a government, organization that experimented and tried to make super soldiers, and the experiment went wrong. So he's loyal. He's got, great, great sarcasm and comic timing. And so I think that comic element and the fact that he represents the everyman or every woman, he will hopefully stay alive for as long as possible or as long as the show's on the air.
So I think it's pretty safe to say you're probably safe for quite some time, but then
I'm safe for at least 11 episodes.
So one of the other things, Austin, that I wanted to talk to you about, and just to kind of shift gears away from television, is I've been reading your bio, and I'm a huge fan of people that do charity work. I do work with Toronto Sick Kids Hospital Toronto, and I understand you work with the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation.
Yes. Well, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes right before, probably a week before my 9th birthday. So I've had it over 28 years. And so part of, growing up with type 1 diabetes is, it's incurable. There's a lot of stuff as a kid you don't necessarily get to do and partake in as a kid with type 1 diabetes. And when I was growing up, my parents provided an atmosphere where I felt like I was able to do everything and I was not hindered by having this disease. And so part of my hopes was when I got older that I would be, kind of a representative or just do something for the organization that, you know, provided so much research and funding and also technology that allowed me to live healthily for 28 years with, you know, diabetes, where 50 years ago, if I had been born with diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, you know, there was a lack of technology and funding behind research that didn't allow people to live normal, healthy lives. And it used to be called juvenile diabetes because you get it when you're young. But statistics show now that more people, there's more adults with quote unquote juvenile or type 1 diabetes. So they can't really call it juvenile anymore because there's more adults than kids with the disease. And that's because organizations like the JDRF have, done such great research and made such innovations to the point where in a couple of years they may have an artificial pancreas that you could, you know, wear and connect to your smartphone so that you and your doctor could be in control of everything that comes into your body and you know, all the insulin and, you know, manage your blood sugar levels to an exactitude that has not been possible for, you know, ever. So my ultimate goal is someone in the public eye and also, you know, someone who has succeeded in a profession that, not many people are out there saying, I have type 1 diabetes. I just want to, you know, provide an example to show kids like I was back in the day that there is no reason they can't do anything they want and succeed in any profession, whether it be acting, you know, surgeon, professional athlete, that they could be anything they want to be. And you know, type 1 diabetes is not going to get in their way.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been diabetic since I was 12.
Wow.
Now, I don't control it very well, but I find I've been able to live the life that I want. And the fact that research and the science has come so far, like I remember reading about there's an oral insulin that they're like talking about, and the fact that they can grow these artificial pancreases, and the fact that you were talking about they can have it attached to your smartphone potentially. The fact that I can control my insulin via Bluetooth possibly in the future is incredibly exciting. And it's good to know that there are celebrities like yourself out there advocating to get people to know about this disease. It's not necessarily, hey, your life's going to suck. No, your life is going to be different, but it's not going to be a death sentence like it was way back in the day. Because very early on, I had a childhood friend who was a type 1 diabetic, and he had to watch his blood sugars, what he ate. I remember we went on a field trip. He got really sick, and nobody knew what to do. But nowadays, with people know, okay, he's diabetic. Here you go. And it's not that hard anymore, and I'm really glad to see that there's more education out there. It's sad that the disease is more prevalent, but that's not to say we can't conquer it within our lifetimes fairly easily.
Oh, yeah. And you know, the fact that, the JDRF, part of the funds that they're raising is, you know, in the States, at least, because there's a JDRF Canada, too, that I've worked with. And part of their, it's to raise money themselves, but also petition the government and lobby the government to match, you know, like, because a private organization can only do so much, but when it's, you know, combined with a government effort to fund research and to, you know, it's that kind of private and sector relationship with a government that, you know, great things could be accomplished. And within the next couple of years, this artificial pancreas project will give people the ability to honestly not have to take their blood sugar anymore, you know, not have to prick their fingers every day, that they will be totally in control of everything and be able to eat like a normal person and not have to count their carbohydrates and worry about their blood sugar level. Once they get on this, you know, like once they get the funds to raise, you know, money for this artificial pancreas project, it within a couple of years, because it's ready for the human trial. It's been through a clinical trial, and it's ready for the human trial. And I don't know how long that takes, but I think it's, I would say in 3 to 5 years before it's kind of approved by the FDA and, you know, goes further into, you know, out there into the market so everyone can enjoy this technology. And who knows what it's going to cost and how that will work with insurance companies. But I've been lucky to have insurance and get, you know, I have an insulin pump. I've been part of the technological boom for diabetes care. And so knowing how much I've benefited from an organization like the JDRF, it's only natural that I feel that I should, you know, give a little bit of my time and energy and you know, my kind of soapbox or my public figure to, you know, raise money and help continue that and hopefully one day towards a cure where we, you know, forget about artificial pancreas, to not have to, you know, once you cure it, you're done. So hopefully within our lifetimes that'll happen. If not, we'll set it up for the next generation to be pretty well off when it comes to diabetes.
Well, I got to say, I'm definitely thankful to have people like yourself involved in such, like I said, a worthwhile research effort, and definitely something that affects the lives of so many Canadians and Americans. Austin, I definitely got to thank you for your time you've spent with us today on This Week in Geek. If people wanted to follow you, where would they have to go to find you?
Well, I'm an avid Twitterer, so I'm an avid tweeter. And my handle is at Austin Basis. That's at AustinBasis. I also have a Facebook fan page that's official Austin Basis. And, you know, I have also a website for, you know, photos and videos and credits that I've done. And that's just AustinBasis.com. Yeah, they could find me on CW on Beauty and the Beast every week starting January 13th again.
Well, once again, Austin, thank you so much for spending time with us, and hopefully we will get a chance to talk to you towards the end of the season, if not hopefully for some of the other projects that you will have down the road.
Yeah, definitely. And is it true that Geek is the new Black?
Oh, God, yeah.
It's true. It's definitely true.
Absolutely.
Big Bang Theory. Yeah.
Well, guys, that was my interview with Austin Basis. So be sure to go check out his stuff. This guy was a fantastic interview, really passionate about his character. And being a geek is kind of a safe role to be on television. So as long as you're close enough to the main character and you're a nerd, they're going to keep you around. So future actors, pay attention to that. So anyway, guys, hopefully you guys had a awesome Thanksgiving weekend. Stay tuned to thisweekingeek.net for more great content. We are going to be taking a content break from December 17th till January 15th so I can enjoy this little luxury you people like to call sleep and pour many, many more hours into Skyrim. So anyway, guys, until next time, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard. And I'll catch you guys again next time right here on thisweekingeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
You gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa, my God, whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.